Main Street begins today with our monthly philosophical currents discussion with University of North Dakota Professor of Philosophy, Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. Together, we're going to explore one of the oldest and maybe most complicated questions in public life. What's right and what's legal? In an era of courtroom battles, political controversy, and social upheaval, and even White House construction, that line can feel especially hard to see. And Dr. Weinstein joins us now to unpack how shifting ideas about morality and law are challenging our sense of justice and what it might all mean for the future of democracy. Jack, welcome back to Main Street.
I am happy to be here, as always, and the fall is slowly drifting into winter and probably a lot more indoor time, so we can talk as long as you want.
Well, this is a topic that we can go down many, many, many different roads with, and you and I have banter back and forth each month trying to figure out what we would like to talk about. This one came from you, Jack. What sparked your interest in exploring the gap between what's right and what's legal?
So you mentioned the construction in the White House, and I've been just sort of plagued with this aphorism that you hear people say often, which is, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. And we've all had friends or colleagues, especially, who've done this, who've broken the rules, and rules that they know they're not supposed to do, and then respond by saying, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't think, or what have you. And then there's nothing to do about it because it's done. And I think that there's a fair amount of that going on politically. I think that people are doing that interpersonally more in my experience than before. There is a sense of entitlement and permission to just push boundaries in a way that wasn't the norm a while ago. And that really made me think not just about manners and social respect, but about legal consequences and this distinction between doing what's right because it's the right thing to do and doing what's right because the law says so and the rules are made to be broken and what we really want is to find a loophole. I think that distinction is super philosophically interesting.
It seems to me that it's harder for Americans to understand what is right, if you will, and then you get into concepts of morality.
So we want to distinguish between folks who break the law because they think the law is unjust or because they're making a political and ethical point, and people who break the law because they want to, they think they're entitled to, they're going to make more money, they're cheating, they're stealing, right? Those are two separate sets of questions. They're related, of course, because it's about the power of law, but they're very different scenarios. So if you are the kind of person who just says the law doesn't apply to me and I'm going to fudge my taxes or I'm going to, I don't know, import Cuban cigars, right? Whatever.
No one will ever know. It's okay.
Exactly right. That's a whole different set of discussions. I've probably said this on the show before, but one of the things that I often tell my students is that the central message of the entire history of ethics is you're not special. And what I mean by that is not that you're not unique and you're not important, but rather that the rules that apply to you apply to everyone else, and the rules that apply to everyone else apply to you. We all have the same rules. We all have the same moral obligations adjusted for. If you're a police officer, you have to jump in front of the bad guy. If you're a firefighter, you have to run into the house, the burning house, right? But aside from that, the rules that apply to other people apply to me. The rules that apply to me apply to other people. And so when I break the rules, I am violating an agreement and an obligation that I expect everyone else to obey. If, however, I'm breaking the rules for purposes of justice, for purposes of calling attention to unfairness, you know, I look back at, well, let me give a less common example. In the early 1970s, it might be late 60s, but I think it's early 1970s, there was a group of Native American activists who were fighting for recognition of civil rights and calling attention to the unfair treatment that they've had. And they took over the island of Alcatraz as a protest. And they were there for a while. And that's illegal. It's civil disobedience. It's not their property. It's public property. But I can understand what they were doing, and I can give them grace and recognize that this was a political process, as opposed to the person who says, well, I am not going to declare this on my taxes because I'm really tight this year and I just need the money. Very different contexts and very different kinds of forgiveness. One is forgiveness because you understand that there's a greater message and a greater purpose, and one that is forgiveness because, well, maybe it's in my character to accept that people make mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, and I'll just move on with my life.
But we all don't have the same thoughts. Your Alcatraz example, I can understand, I can have grace. I want to throw those folks in jail because they are breaking the law. There's no clear lines. It's a matter almost of perspective, but we're not all on the same page in this country for sure.
We are not. And part of that is caused by the fact that we have different moral systems and that our legal system is not perfectly aligned with the morality that it may at one point have been based on. So, for example, adultery is probably immoral. It is not illegal. Lying may often be immoral, but it's not illegal unless you're signing a contract or under oath. Speeding, going 81 miles an hour on I-29 instead of 80, that is illegal, but it's probably not immoral. Doing some minor repairs on your house without a permit, that may very well be illegal. It's probably not immoral. So all of this has to do with the fact that there are two very different streams of requirements, commands, justifications, histories, qualifications that sometimes overlap. Murder is both illegal and immoral. Stealing people's property is both illegal and immoral. But that connection is, I don't want to say accidental, because the history of law and the history of morality is complicated and intertwined, but it's not guaranteed, and sometimes they cross at surprising places, and sometimes they're very far apart at very surprising places.
We're enjoying our monthly Philosophical Currents discussion with Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He, of course, is a University of North Dakota professor of philosophy, talking about what's right and what's legal. Jack, give us the historical perspective. What have thinkers like Socrates or even Martin Luther King Jr. said about the topic that have shaped our modern understanding of civil disobedience and the moral limits of the law, something we talked about just a moment ago?
Those are actually the two perfect examples. I don't know if you had that in mind, but they offer very, very striking contrasts. Because Socrates, although I should say Plato Socrates, because we don't really know anything about the real Socrates, Socrates was found guilty of corrupting the youth. He was sentenced to death. He was put in prison. And we have a whole Platonic dialogue about him being in prison and his friends saying, look, we've bribed the guards. Come escape with us. You'll be fine. This happens all the time. And Socrates has this monologue where he says, how can I leave? Mother Athens has fed me, has educated me, has protected me, has taken care of me my whole life. And now I don't like what she says, so I should leave. That is immoral. If I take what she gives me, I have to take the punishments that she gives me as well. And he acquiesces to drinking the hemlock in the sequel dialogue and dies. And so he is very clear that there's no notion of civil disobedience yet at this point. And he's very clear, though, that if that term had existed, he would not be in favor of it. Martin Luther King, borrowing from St. Augustine, argues that there is God's law and there's man's law. Those are his terms. And when man's law is in alignment with God's law, then you have a just law and you should follow it. But when the two conflict, when man's law is in violation of God's law, then not only do you have no obligation to obey the law, but you also have the obligation to change it. Now, this is natural law theory. I actually teach a whole class, philosophy of law, especially for pre-law students. We spend a huge amount of time talking about natural law and its alternatives, which we don't have to get into. But the basic idea is there is this sense of right and wrong, and it overshadows, it adds credibility to what we call positive law, written law, the actual law of human beings. And so Martin Luther King says, look, if the law is wrong, if the law is just, not only don't you obey it, but you shouldn't obey it. And both of these approaches have very serious complexities and very serious objections. So for Socrates, the objection can be very straightforward, which is sometimes the law is wrong. And if the law is forcing you to do something that's immoral, you can step above it. And if you always do the thing just because the state says so, you're never going to change the laws and things will not get better. The flip side for Martin Luther King is, we all have different versions of God. We all have different versions of God's law. We all have different senses of what's right and wrong. And so to say that your vision and your interpretation of the scripture is the one that overshadows a more secular, more widespread notion of right and wrong in the law is to be presumptuous, it is to be to force your religious view on other people. And what's interesting is that despite the fact that our laws are secular in nature, we are more accepting at times of Martin Luther King's picture, and he has become part of the pantheon of American saints, although that is changing in the last 6 months, and much less so than Socrates. So ask yourself what freedom means. And there are a lot of different versions of what freedom might mean. But the American version of freedom is getting to do what we want when we want to do it without consequences. Right? That's what it means to be free in America. And when that's your definition of freedom, law inherently stops you from being free. Law restricts your desires, it restricts your actions. But there's another version of freedom, and I experienced this when I lived in Austria for a couple of years, where everyone obeys the law, everyone pays attention, and that means that when I walk around at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was young, I was carrying a guitar because I was playing gigs and stuff, listening to my Walkman, that's how long ago it was, I knew no one was going to mug me. No one was going to hit me overhead. No one was going to take my stuff. I was safe. The women I knew who walked around at night by themselves were safe. It was just a much safer place. And so America, in places of chaos and disagreement, it feels freer in the sense that we can make our own rules, but feels less free in the sense that we are more vulnerable and life is less predictable. Whereas in a different environment where I have less flexibility in what I want to do and what I want to be, but I'm not vulnerable and my stuff is safe and I can have a very predictable life and plan accordingly. And those are two very contrasting views that help us navigate this distinction between morality and legality.
So let's look at the future of our democracy. What does it mean when people lose faith that the law reflects what's right?
The first thing to remember is that the foundation of democracy is the social trust between people. So even more important than our relationship with our government is our relationship with our neighbors. So if our neighbors don't trust us to follow the law and we don't follow them, that is a tremendous crisis. Move up the ladder, and now we ask, are our representatives following the law? Are our representatives corrupt? Are they exploiting things for their own advantage, either personal or political? And that's a different kind of crisis. And I think we're seeing both of those right now, but we're very attuned to the corruption of our elected officials. And this issue with Trump in the White House is actually a really useful teaching tool without taking a position on anything. Donald Trump does not own the White House. And Donald Trump is supposed to get permission not just from Congress to make changes, but from the National Park Service, which is responsible for maintaining the White House, right? The president is a guest of the country. The president is a guest of the Park Service. So by knocking down the East Wing, Donald Trump broke the law and the regulations by doing something he didn't have the authority to do. And that is a legal violation. At the same time, we've been seeing a lot of conversations about this was where the first lady's office was, and this is where the old movie theater was, and this is there's so much history and there's so much meaning. And by knocking down the East Wing, he is making history disappear. He's violating the memory of all of these people who are intertwined symbolically. And that's a moral argument. So you have the people who are saying he did the wrong thing because it's against the rules. And you have people who are saying it's the wrong thing because it is morally and historically irresponsible. And then you get the people who say he's the president, he gets to do what he wants. And that's not a legal argument because it's blatantly not true, but it may be a moral argument in the sense that many people have imbued Donald Trump in particular with a kind of moral authority and a kind of permission to act different than anyone else. And go back for just a second to the thing I said a couple minutes ago about the central rule of ethics. Part of what is happening is that we are suggesting, or many people are suggesting, that Donald Trump is a special case, that the rules that apply to me apply to you, but not to him. And the rules that apply to him don't apply to me or you. And so we are seeing a kind of gift of moral exclusiveness and moral authority to Donald Trump that we have never given any other president in history. Whether that's the right or the wrong thing to do is, of course, for the listeners to decide.
And we wake up this morning, Jack, to news that the White House just fired the board that reviews presidential construction projects. Hey, they don't like what I'm doing, fire them. I'll get in there someone who agrees with me. How are Americans then in the future supposed to respect rules and law?
Well, that's the long-term question, right? Because I don't know the administrative regulations of who appoints whom in of this particular board, because there are some boards that serve at the behest of the president, and there's some boards that are governed by Congress and other things.
All of this board apparently were appointed by former President Joe Biden, NBC News is reporting, and that the president is, quote unquote, preparing to appoint a new slate of members to the commission that are more aligned with President Trump's America's First policies. Okay, continue on.
Yeah, so he didn't break any laws. He didn't break any rules. He did something by firing these people that are completely within his authority. But now we have a moral question. And this is a really deep, really important moral question at the core of our political discussion right now, which is it moral to surround yourself by yes men? Is it moral to choose a staff, advisors, coworkers, people under your supervision who will always agree with you no matter what you say and celebrate your decisions, whether good or bad, whether successful or unsuccessful, and always spin decisions to make you feel good about the decisions that you've made? That's who Donald Trump has surrounded himself by. And it's perfectly legal. But morally, it feels like a bad choice and a bad strategy for leading a very complicated, very large society with diverse and contradicting opinions. You know, if I have a problem, I don't want my wife. Let me actually put it more basic. My wife comes up to me and says, I say to her, do I look good in this outfit? I don't want her to say yes if I don't. It's going to hurt me for a second, but I want her to say, no, you don't look good. Change something else because I don't want to look good. I want our leaders, my coworkers, I want the people who make decisions, I want the electrician who works on my renovations of my house. I want them to be surrounded by people who say, well, wait a minute, think about this. Here's what you might be doing wrong. And I would rather it be slower and maybe cost a little more money, knowing that there were checks and balances, knowing that there was supervision, so that it gets done right in the first place. And surrounding a leader with people whose job it is to always celebrate everything the leader says and does will make the leader feel good, but completely violates the spirit of representative democracy, which is that the president is there to serve us. We are not there to serve the president's ego. And unless you really imbue Donald Trump with this specialness, unless you see him as a messianic figure, which some people do, or an agent of the will of God, which some people do, right? If you think Trump is like Muhammad and like Jesus and the prophet of Mormonism, Joseph Smith, unless you think he's in the pantheon of these people, which some people do, then you want people who disagree with him, and you want lawyers there to say, even if morally this question is ambiguous, legally this question is clear, and you shouldn't do X, Y, or Z. Those are the storms that are raging over us, and figuring out how to navigate them is tremendously complicated.
That was Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He's also the host of Why, Philosophical Discussions About Everyday Life, that airs here on Prairie Public. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of North Dakota. And we've been chatting on this Philosophical Currents segment about the uneasy space between what's moral and what's legal, and how our understanding of both might shape the health of our democracy in years to come. Jack, thank you for the discussion.
Thank you, as always. My man is smooth like Barry, and his voice got better.